Welcome back to the Daily Drama on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The coronavirus pandemic has changed the way nearly all of us conduct our lives in some way. For many of us, it has changed our personal finances. For example, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, of the 20 million jobs lost back in April, 55% of the cuts impacted women. Even if you did not lose your job, how you spend and save changed. Well, tonight, we're talking about strategies to keep your finances intact in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. And my guest is Color of Money columnist for The Washington Post, Michelle Singletary. If you want to talk about this, if you have questions about your finances, where you are, where you should be, how to stay afloat, this is the program for you. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Hey, Michelle.
Hey.
I mixed our names up. How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
All right. So let's get to it. I have so many questions for you, but I really want to start with, you know, here we are now some 6 months in since the shutdown back in March or so. What is the biggest change for people and families who did not lose their jobs during the course of the pandemic but are still trying to figure out their finances?
Well, you know, I've been finding that there's really two groups of people, those who did not lose their job and are making the same amount of money are actually finding that they are saving quite a bit of money and are able to pay off debts or make a lot of headway in debts that they have. Or build up that emergency fund that I'm always telling and encouraging people to have. So the pandemic in some ways has been, I hate to use the word bonus, but they have found some, you know, financial sunshine in this horrible, horrible thing that has happened to our country and the world. And then there are people who maybe they didn't lose their job, but maybe their spouse has either lost their job or had a reduction in income. For example, if you worked in a restaurant, maybe you're still working again, but you're not working the same amount of hours. Or the Post just had a story from one of our reporters that even those who are working in, say, restaurants are noticing, you know, obviously their tips are less. I mean, everybody's masked. It's kind of like, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and so people are not necessarily, you know, tipping, or they don't have the same amount of customers. And so that's what's sort of happening. It's really interesting, the dynamics. And then, of course, is the devastating effect that many people are having who have lost their job and are still not working. Mm-hmm.
What would you suggest for people to start looking at right now if they haven't done any planning already?
Well, I mean, you know, lots of us, not me, because, you know, I've been watching my money since I was like two. So, but there are a lot of people who put off managing, you know, doing the things that they need to do with their money, budgeting, looking at what's coming in, what's going out, looking at their debts, coming up with a financial plan. And they have the time now. I mean, we are, you know, locked in our homes, or you should be, in terms of not, you know, going out so much, or maybe you're working from home. And now is the time to follow that promise that you've made to yourself. Oh, I'm going to get around to that budget. I'm going to get around to doing my will. I mean, now is the time where you have the time to take care of these financial issues that you've put off for so long.
Hmm. So let's talk about a financial plan, a pandemic financial plan. What's the first thing that you should, let's go ahead and break it down.
So, you know, I like to talk about, you know, groups of people. So there's various groups of people. So if you have lost your job, clearly the thing that you need to be focused on is keeping a roof over your head and food on the table. Don't worry about all this other stuff, the emergency fund and paying off debts. You know, you got to take care of the necessities. And it's okay that you, even if you can't pay your credit card bill, certainly you want to call the company, the credit card issuer, and let them know what's going on, or call your mortgage company, or reach out to your landlord and come up with some sort of payment plan or agreement. So all this other planning stuff we're talking about, that's not for you right now. You got to take care of what you need to take care of. But let's say you are working, but your hours are reduced. You're sort of like that first group. Take care of the necessities. You know, don't worry about your credit score. We can fix that down the road. I've written about this a lot and will write about it when we come out of this. How do you repair your credit? One thing you want to do is not call any of those companies that you hear, oh, I can, you know, get you pennies on the dollars for your debt. Don't do any of that.
Why not?
Well, because first of all, you're going to be paying a lot of money that you can do things for yourself. And a lot of those companies are scams. They're not going to actually help you pay off your debts. They're going to actually put you in a worse position. And quite frankly, there's not much that they can do that you can't do for yourself. The number one way to repair your credit is just to begin to pay your bills on time. So once you get back to working, once you get back to having your income, just begin to pay your bills on time. That is the number one way to increase your credit score. And honestly, if you're in this position, you're probably not going to be buying a house. You're not going to be getting a car. So you've got time to wait for that credit score to come up. And the last thing you want to do is fall prey to a scam. And then the last group, which was to your question about how you begin to plan. Okay, so now you're still working, you're home, you're spending less, hopefully. Stay off the internet. You don't need to be buying a whole bunch of stuff online. Unless you've got the money and you're just doing it to help small businesses or restaurants. That's another group of people. But now, so you were spending, you were eating out, you planned that big vacation that you can't go on now, which is probably good because you didn't have the money anyway. So now you're going to pull out paper and pen. And people are always asking me, is there app I can use? And like, that's, you know, pen and paper. Just what is coming in, the amount of money you're coming in after taxes and deductions, and then all your bills, and then come up with a debt payment plan if you've got debt. I advise people to sort of start with the debts with the lowest balance and start with those. Pay all the money you can on that, and then pay the minimum for the rest of the debts and take it slow and do it that way. If you don't have a lot of debts, now's the time. Do a network statement. Take a long view look of how your finances are. If you're doing well and you've cut your expenses, but you have not really been putting enough money away in your retirement, now's the time to increase those percentages. Maybe you were doing 5%. Now you can stretch yourself to 10%. And I know people are like, what is that? How crazy? Did you see the market? You know, listen, we're talking long term, but you're going to be needing to put away upwards of 15% of your pay to have enough for retirement. And I know that's a huge percentage, but again, start where you can start. If you're doing 5, push yourself to 10. If you can't push yourself to 10, push yourself to 8, but certainly push yourself. So those are some concrete things you can do now if you're in a good financial position.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Michelle Singletary of the Washington Post, columnist for The Color of Money. We are trying to help you stay afloat with your finances during the COVID-19 pandemic. Things have changed for all of us. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the things that we've seen a lot of, all you have to do is just talk to your friends who happen to be homeowners. It seems that everyone is attempting and succeeding at refinancing their mortgage because of the historic low interest rates. What are your thoughts about that?
I think if you're in the position to take care of, to take advantage of the low historical rates, sure, go ahead. But do the math first. I get this question all the time. And if you're like 20 years into your mortgage, you got 10 years left, it may not be to your benefit to reset that mortgage to 30 years just to shave off one, you know, percentage point or half a percentage point. You can do that by just making principal payments. But if you're fairly new in your loan, and let's say your loan was at 4 or 5% and you can get an interest rate locking in at 2%, and you're going to be in that home for a while, absolutely take advantage of that. But again, do the math. It was a long time before I refinanced my loan. During the Great Recession, when mortgage rates went super low, my husband and I took several years before we took advantage of that, because we were making principal payments, and I actually called the bank, and the bank person was like, look, I'm looking at you, and you don't need to do this, because there's a cost to refinancing, and many people don't realize that because they add that onto the loan, and it's nothing out of pocket, so they feel like, oh, well, there really wasn't a cost to this refinance. There is a cost to that refinance. So just be sure that you're being smart about it. Don't just focus on the interest rate. Again, you know, unless you're going to go, if you're, you know, you're 20 years in, you're going to go down to a 15, it may not make sense for you to refinance.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Michelle Singletary about making sure your finances stay afloat. I do want to talk a little bit about, because you just made a comment about that offhand, about the stock market and, you know, retirement, whether you have, 403B or 401K or an IRA or any of these things. As a stock market watcher, over the past 2 weeks, the stock market has been very volatile. But long term, after the big dip that we saw in March and April, the stock market has climbed exponentially and is still higher now than it was during the dip. For people who are watching this and still having questions about it, what should they be doing?
Well, most people should be doing nothing. And I know that's hard to hear, but back in March when it dipped as much as like 30%, and I saw my portfolio dip, people were like, should I get out? Should I? This is it. This is it. And I was like, no, if you have a good plan in place and you have many years to retirement, you don't do anything, because that's called timing the market, which nobody can do. And timing the market means you're trying to figure out when to get in and when to get out and when to get back in. But you got to be right both times. You got to know exactly when to get out and exactly when to get back in. And if you know that, like, you'd be a multimillionaire. You would need to take advice from me. So, you know, don't try to time the market. And even if you're close to retirement or in retirement, think about this. If you're 60 or 65 in your retirement, the chances are, because of the how long we're living, you're going to still live 20 years in retirement. So that's 20 years your money needs to grow, and at the very least, keep pace with inflation. So even if you're in retirement, you certainly want to make sure that you have access to money that is not in the market. So that would be savings. That would be, you should have a portion of your portfolio in bonds or something that is not going to be, you know, ricocheting up and down. But the rest of your money can still be left there to grow. So even those close to retirement, in retirement, don't need to panic. If they have had a plan and they have money that is not exposed to the volatility of the market. Now, let's just say you had 100% in equities and you're 65. Well, that's crazy. You shouldn't be doing that if you don't have any money set aside. So you may have to pull some money out when it's, you know, the market is down, but only pull out what you might need for the next 6 months to a year, and then let the rest, let the market do what it does, which is eventually even out.
Let's go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Kathy calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I'm calling because I do have quite an extensive portfolio, but I do have, like, a lot of funds in annuities. I have a six-figure income. I am over 55. So I'm moving into retirement, but I need someone to help me to put this puzzle all together. So I'm calling to see if Ms. Singletary is available or have a company that will reference me to who can help me figure out what I need to do to make sure that I am set up for success moving forward.
Michelle?
Right. Well, so I am not a financial planner, and so I don't take on clients. The work that I do in the community is through my church, First Baptist Church of Glen Arden. We have a financial ministry. We meet the first of every month on Saturday. We're doing it virtually now and have been since the pandemic hit. So that's one way to become informed about how to put all these pieces together. If you need someone to look at your portfolio, your annuities and your income, then that's a licensed financial planner. And I would suggest a fee-only financial planner. And you can go online. There's an association. Just put fee-only financial planner association, and you'll come up with the association or ask for recommendations about planners. Talk to people who you know who might have a financial planner. And if you don't want to, you know, you could certainly pay a certain amount of money for an overall financial plan, which my husband and I did, you know, years ago, and it has paid off like tenfold to have someone look at our entire financial situation and make recommendations. In fact, our financial planner, who was a black woman, she is no longer a financial planner to individuals. I was going through my files because during the pandemic, you know, one of the things you do is like, you know, declutter. So I was going through my file, had a huge folder of the recommendations she made, and I was reading through them. We took all her recommendations and put things in place. This is like 15 years ago. And now we are so much better based on all her recommendations. It was incredible. She's like telling us to put money in for our kids' college fund. She said, told me that I was way too conservative in my 401k, and I changed that. And
you
today,
changed a conservative?
Okay.
So hold on. Hold on, Michelle.
Yes,
I've got to take a break, and I have a question that Kathy needs to hear the answer to. So, Kathy, please stay on the line. We're also going to talk to Tony on the other side of this break. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. Still taking phone calls at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation is on Sirius XM Channel 141 for the next half hour. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back. We are talking about strategies to keep your finances intact in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm Harold Fisher. My guest is Color of Money columnist for The Washington Post, Michelle Singletary. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before we let Kathy go, one of the things that you just suggested is a fee-only financial planner. Why fee-only, Michelle?
Well, one of the things about fee-only is you know what the money is up front. And because there are various ways that financial planners can get paid, by commission, by charging you based on the amount of assets they manage. But fee-only is sort of a straight line. I'm going to charge you this amount of money every hour to give you advice, or I'm going to charge you this flat fee to give you a financial plan. And it's an easier way, more transparent, for people to understand what it costs to have this financial advice. Now, the tricky thing is a lot of people don't want to pay for financial advice. Somehow, they, in their heads, they think, well, why should I pay someone to tell me about money that I need to make? But I always sort of equate it to if you had you need to have a tooth pull, you're not going to try to pull it yourself, or you shouldn't. You know, you're going to go to a dentist. So if you're not quite sure what to do with your money, you go to a professional who can help you put in place some things that will help make you money down the road.
Hmm. Well, there you have it. Kathy,
okay,
thank you so much for your phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about your finances in the midst of the pandemic, how to make sure that you stay afloat during this critical time. Let's go to Tony calling from Maryland. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yes, I'm calling from Maryland, and I've retired. I'm 66 years old. I have a 401 that's accumulated all this money. I have other stocks and bonds. And I'm thinking now that I'm, you know, I don't have a house note anymore, I'm thinking, what should I do with this money? It's just in there. Should I start spending it? Should I just let it go? I mean, let it accumulate more? What?
Well, Tony, right? Yeah, you know, so I can be adopted at any moment, Tony.
Yeah, let's see what your husband has to say about that. You're going to have to do two.
I mean, I could do that, but you'd have to leave your husband, so I don't care.
Right, see, there you go.
That's a deal breaker. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah, Michelle, don't start any stuff on my show now.
Hopefully my past is not listening. So it's a really good good question, Tony. You know, I just talked about fee-only planners. So I think you're perfect for hiring a professional to have you look at an overall plan. Now, you sounds like you're probably doing fine by yourself. You just probably want, like, someone, a second pair of eyes. And so in your case, you could just pay for a financial plan, and planners will put together a plan. And the price range, I hate to call out a price because it depends on so much, like how much you have and all the kinds of work they're going to put in it. But, you know, you could probably, you know, I'm going to just say $1,000 to $1,500, something around there. It could be more, could be less. But you can start with the National Association of Personal Finance Advisors, and NAPFA. You just go online and type in Fee-Only Financial Planner Association, and you'll come up with that. Or, again, recommendations from folks who may have planners. And I would interview a couple of people to make sure they're in line with your values, and then be very clear about what you want, and also make sure that they are something called a fiduciary. That's one question you should ask them. Are you a fiduciary, which means they have to make recommendations that are in your best interest. Now, I know you know it sounds crazy, like wouldn't they do that anyway? Not necessarily. So you want to be sure that they are a fiduciary. So ask them that. If they're not, I would not use them. So, Tony, I think that's what you should do.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Tony. And don't call Michelle after the program.
Yeah, but I got a single sister, and she's just as fine as me. So, you know.
Oh, Lord.
I'm getting money that I don't need now. So I don't know.
Right. We'll save your sister for the dating show. How's that? Oh, my gracious. Tony, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Lauren, calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Lauren, are you there?
So would she be able to share with us the monthly meeting that they have, the Zoom ID or the ID number and the phone number?
Sure, I most certainly can. The best way, because nobody's going to remember this long number on the radio, so just call our church, First Baptist Church of Glen Arden, and they can put you in touch with an email, or you can just email me at the post, and I can give that to you. So it's First Baptist Church of Glen Arden. We have a monthly, our next one is actually not the first Saturday, but the second, October 10th, from noon to 2. And we talk about, it's a year-long program, but you can jump in at any time during the year. And we have different presentations every month. Like last month, we talked about investing. And I went through, you know, what are stocks, what are bonds, what the market is doing. So just contact the church, and they can put you in touch with how to find out the Zoom information.
All right. Thanks so much. Keep
You're
up the
welcome.
Great work.
Thank you so much, Lauren. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. What do you do if you find yourself still working but in a great deal of debt right now in the midst of the pandemic? Is the debt that you may have now and the thought process different from the conversations that you and I have had pre-pandemic about debt?
I would say that they are different in the sense of, now, if everything is the same, then the conversation is not different. You do all the things that you and I have been talking about for years. You're going to sit down. You're going to come up with a plan. I call it the debt dash. Dave Ramsey, which many people, your listeners are probably familiar with, calls it the snowball effect. But essentially, you start with the debts with the lowest balance. Because what we found psychologically is that when people can get rid of debt quickly, it really energizes them and motivates them to get rid of that debt even quicker. So you don't actually end up paying more in interest by starting with the balance with the debt with the lowest balance. So you list all your debts from the smallest to the largest. That first smallest debt, you apply all the extra money that you now have because you're home, you're not vacationing, you're not eating out, to that debt. You make the minimum payments on the other ones. When you get rid of that small debt, then you apply that payment plus the extra money that you have to that next debt, and so on and so on. And I'm telling you, time and time again, we have found that this has helped people get out of debt. I worked with a couple who had about $40,000 in debt, and they did come up with a five-year plan targeting the debts with the highest interest rate. Put them on the debt dash. They got rid of that debt in less than 14 months, saving over $7,000 in interest under their plan using the high interest. And part of that was because they just, when they got rid of a couple debts, they were like, oh, my gosh, we can do this in no time. And they rushed through that debt dash. Now, one quick thing, if I could throw in a little advertising. So my church, First Baptist Church of Gazon, has a women's conference coming up next week, and I'm doing a master class in finance. So if you go to the website for FBCG, glenarden.org, you can sign up for the master class for the conference. And for, you know, a couple of hours, I'm going to be walking people through different financial issues. So it would be a good way to get an introduction to the program that I run, which the program itself is free. Not the conference isn't free, but the program that I run is free.
Do men, in your experience, look at money differently compared to women?
You know, they do. I'm going to get in trouble. But
go ahead and get in trouble. Look, I just helped you get out of a rogue adoption. And so we're going to dispense with that and let you get in this kind of trouble. Go right ahead.
I find that in my teachings, and I teach, you know, I said in my church, and my husband and I teach a couples and money class. I find that a lot of men are very arrogant about what they think. They will come in like, I know what I'm doing. And oftentimes, not all the time, the wives are like, well, I don't really know about this money. And I find out that they actually know more than they think. And the husbands don't know as much as they think. I mean, it's really funny. You know?
Well, Michelle, like your sister, not everybody is married.
Well, that's true, but I'm talking just single and married. I mean, I just think that the studies have shown that men are overly confident and women are not confident enough. Like when you look at investing, there's studies that show that women are actually better investors than men because we tend to put our money in the funds that we want and let it stay, where men are trading much more, and that reduces their returns because there's a cost to trading. So actually, women are better investors than men.
To that point, and I'm glad I have you on here, because what we are starting to see from, you know, some of these online, you know, trading companies, whether it's TD Ameritrade or E-Trade, or that they aren't charging fees for trades. How is that possible? And how do they make their money?
Well, they may not charge for a trade, but there is still a cost to managing the funds. So they have costs built into the management of the funds. Even index funds, which is mostly how my husband and I invest, have a cost to them.
Index funds, for those who are not in your household, what are index funds?
So you often hear people say, like, the Dow or the S&P, those are index benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, you might have an index fund that is invested in the S&P 500, which is the 500 largest companies. So you would put money in an index fund that simply follows the S&P or follows the Dow or follows the NASDAQ, or it follows there are different index funds that follow, you know, large companies. There are index that follow mid-sized companies. There are index that follow small companies. And so the investment managers simply follow those index. So they're not trading in and out. They're just looking at the index and mirroring the investments of those index. So the cost is less because they don't have to do a whole lot of work. But the work is less than someone who's actively managing, meaning they're looking at stocks, they're figuring out what they should buy, what should they sell. So there's a lot more work to that.
Okay.
But there's also more cost.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Alan calling from Chicago. Hey, how are you?
Hero, my noob. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing just fine, maintaining. What's on your mind?
Hey, man, this is a fantastic day. We've got Michelle Singletary on the Jelly Drums, so of course I had to call in.
Oh, thank you.
So go ahead.
Okay, I have a kind of a strategic question for Michelle. I'll try to keep it as brief as possible. My wife was in a position that was restructured, and normally the circumstances, she would get severance, you know, and she's worked there for about 12 and a half years. So she got about 3 weeks for every year. In lieu of paying her a salary in a lump sum, what they did was they paid her money through a retirement plan, through a savings plan, and she can't touch it until she's 55.
55?
She could touch it.
5'5 or 6'5?
5'5. Now, okay. she just turned, I hope she didn't get mad at me, she just turned 51 a couple of days ago.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what I thought was, you know, because of the CARES Act, there's no penalty for taking your money out until December 31st. And I advise that she roll it over into an IRA and just be careful to transfer it to one that was that had low fees on, like an index fund. Because mm-hmm. some of those IRAs charge very high fees and they can eat away at your returns. The thing I was kind of still can't really put my arms around is, what's the benefit for the company? I can see how they kind of defer paying somebody out, but what's the benefit for the company to offer money to your retirement plan as opposed to paying you out through cash or regular payroll?
I'm not sure why they would do that. I really can't answer that question. There are all kinds of reasons. Maybe because they can pay it over time. Then they don't have the money right now. They're investing in it. They don't want to pull it out of the investments to pay a cash lump sum. There could be a number of reasons.
Sure.
What I would like to find out, though, why do you want – is what they – did they put it in something that is doing well, fees are reasonable or low? Is there some reason why you feel like you need to pull it out?
Actually, I don't. My thought is to leave it there. If there was an emergency that came up, I would say perhaps pull it out. But otherwise, because I can cover our expenses, I'm like, there's no reason to pull out right now.
Yeah.
Just wait till you're 55 and let it grow. But if the situation came up, as opposed to taking it now, and because you could take it as a direct distribution now, but there would be tax, and there, you know, there wouldn't be a penalty, but there'd still be high taxes on it. I would say defer that, you know, put it into an IRA, let it, you know, roll. If you need to take it out from the IRA. Don't take it all out.
Right.
You know, try to save as much as you can, and wait till you're 55, and hopefully let it grow over time.
Yeah, I mean, if you're happy with how it's placed and the investments that it's in, I would say leave it out. So what he's talking about, for those who may not be familiar, the CARES Act allowed for withdrawals from your retirement plan if you've been affected by COVID. So if she lost that job or was downsized out of their job because of COVID, then she would be able to take the money out before 59 and a half or 55 if you've been terminated from your job. So a lot of people don't realize that if you're 55 and you've been terminated, you don't the 59 and a half rule doesn't apply. So she's 51, so both of those rules apply. But under the CARES Act, she could take that money out up to $100,000 withdrawal and not pay the 10% penalty, and the taxes could be spread out over 3 years. And if you say down the road, you're like, no, I really didn't need that money, you can actually put it back and not be subject to taxes and, again, the 10% penalty. But you can, and I tell these people when they leave their job, if you're happy with how the money is being invested, where it is, even if you retire from the company, there's no reason to roll it over. Lots of people want to roll it over because it gives them perhaps more freedom to do what they want with the money. However, lots of people aren't going to manage it well. So if you've got a good management company in your 401k, or in this case, you know, they put it in the plan because she was downsized, then just leave it there. There's no reason to do that. The CARES Act also allowed you to take loans. Normally, you'd be limited to $50,000 or, you know, a certain balance in there. Now they bumped that up to $100,000, and you don't have to pay the loan payments for a year. But again, if you really haven't been impacted, you've been impacted, but it hasn't created a financial crisis, leave the money where it is. Don't take advantage of that, even though it seems like a good deal, but you still got to pay taxes on the money, even if it's spread out over 3 years. And if it's a loan, you still got to pay the loan back plus interest, even though you're paying it to yourself. So just be careful about taking advantage of that. Take advantage of it if you need to. If you needed to pay for your food or your roof over your head, then certainly do that. Normally, we would not suggest you touch your retirement money. But these are extraordinary times, and extraordinary times call for extraordinary measures.
Mm-hmm. All right, Alan.
Wow.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Take care up there in Chicago. I appreciate your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to go back to financial advising real quick. If you have a company that your business or the company that you work for is using, no matter who it is, why not call, let's say, you know, Merrill Lynch or T. Rowe Price or somebody like that? Why not call them for advice about managing the money as opposed to a for-fee financial advisor?
You know what? That is exactly what you should do. I was talking to someone who may not have that available to them. But if your company, if you have money in a 401k or TSP or 403b, the company that's managing that, and even in the case of the government, they have financial workshops all the time, especially for people getting close to retirement. Definitely avail yourselves of the folks who are managing those plans. And oftentimes, you can do it at a much lower cost than going out to some outside individual or company. So you're absolutely right. If you don't have access to that and say you're just investing in an IRA or something like that, then yeah, sure. But most of the companies now, and there have been a lot of rule changes, because before, companies were very reluctant to offer advice to employees because they didn't want to be held liable if the advice turned out to be bad. But the Labor Department has loosened some of those rules so that more and more companies, you'll see that they'll have workshops for you to go to. I know my company does, and I've actually, you know, taught some of those classes. And I availed myself of our company has this test program where they put you in touch with a financial advisor. And I took part of the test, and it was great. He did a financial plan. It didn't cost me anything. The company paid for it. And he basically, you know, I'm not going to brag or nothing, but he was like, what you need me for? But, you know, but it was good to have another pair of eyes on what we've been doing. And it was a very thorough plan. So you're right. Go to your company. And I would hope that more companies would do something like what my company did, giving people access to financial plans who can do a comprehensive plan. Because he looked at our, he looked at our retirement plans. He looked at our insurance. He looked at Social Security. It was everything. It's like I don't know, 3 or 4 inches thick book of all the things and where we were doing things well and some things that we might look for. That page was like half a page. But definitely take advantage of that. You're absolutely right.
Well, so let us hope that the owner of the Post, Jeff Bezos, decides to hold a financial planning meeting. I will be at that one. How about that?
Yeah.
Got another question from the phone line. Beverly, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
Ms. Singletary. Thank you for taking my call. Actually, I think I have a couple of questions. I don't like investing in the stock market. What are some other ways? I don't believe in it. I'd rather give to causes. I mean, I invested in it, but I don't believe in it. What are some other ways to invest money?
So when you say, let me just ask you, when you say I don't believe in it, what does that mean?
That was my question.
I value, like, causes I can believe in, you know, like church. I mean, I give to my church, and, you know, I don't trust my money in the stock market, you know,
So are you working right now?
Yes.
And you work for a company?
Yep.
We don't know who you are. So what company?
Government.
Oh, you work for the company? So that's okay. All right. So do you go to the grocery store?
I do.
You do? So you eat?
Sometimes, yes.
Do you go shopping?
Yes.
So what do you buy?
Clothes.
You buy clothes. Do you drive?
Yep.
You got a car?
Yep.
Okay. You go on vacation?
Yep.
And when you go on vacation, where do you stay?
Hotels.
So that's investing. So when you say you don't believe in investing, investing is...
No, I don't believe in the stock market.
Okay, that is still the stock market. So everything I just asked you is the stock market. Marriott, Target, all the things that you, the grocery stores, these companies go to the stock market to raise money to improve their stores and hire more people. So when you say I don't believe in the stock market, you're saying I don't believe in our capital system, which supplies you with food, builds your home, you know, provides a place for you to go on vacation. That is investing in the stock market. Now, you could do more target investing when you invest in companies that you believe in. That's perfectly fine. So you could find investments in the stock market that align with your values, that treat their employees well, that have child care. So the stock market is just the everyday things that we do, and you are supporting that, and you're supporting that when you buy bonds. Like, for example, local governments issue bonds to build roads or improve schools. That's the stock market. So you should believe in that because it helps local governments, it helps companies, it helps you. And we know that the stock market, of all the investments, tend to have a better return even than real estate over time. And you want to still have a diversity investment, so you want the stock market, which is bonds and stocks, and you want to perhaps, you know, your home could increase in value, although I don't think of my home as an investment. You could do CDs, but that's not going to pay you very much. So I want you not to feel like somehow that's some sort of separate system out there that doesn't care about anybody. Now, are there issues with the stock market? Sure it is. But a lot of those issues have to do with the people who are trading that make it go crazy. But you and I, regular folks, you need to believe in that because that is a way for you to have growth in your money and help companies grow.
And I do have a question and a comment to piggyback on that, Beverly, because you were kind of equating, you said you don't believe in the stock market and you would prefer to give to causes. Now, this conversation is about your personal finances, mm-hmm, and how to stay afloat and to make sure that you are financially secure. Mm-hmm. I'm a little confused as to how giving to a personal cause, while it may make you morally and spiritually secure, I don't understand how that would, you know, short of tithing at your church, which is great, but I don't understand how that would make you financially secure. And I want to make sure that I'm understanding your question or your comment.
I guess if it was, you know, organizations that I could believe in, you know, I mean, I don't know what these companies are doing and they go up and down. And I don't like to vote, you know, the instability of it. So I'd rather get to something that's more secure.
Okay, I get that. But you know, there's a way to socially invest. There are definitely companies that do that, like Calvert in Maryland is a company that that you can socially, they have funds where, you know, like, for example, you don't believe in smoking, so they don't invest in, they might have funds that don't invest in tobacco companies. So there is a way to invest based on your values.
Yeah, and as we know, and I don't know how old you are, Beverly, but you know, but Michelle and I, I'm sure, you know, we remember there was a time, you know, during apartheid in South Africa,
when there were
companies that American investors were pulling out of,
right,
because they had connections to apartheid South Africa, the Exxon Valdez oil spill in Alaska. You know, and I'm talking, this is history, certainly, but there were cases where people were turning in their Exxon gas cards and pulling out of their investments in Exxon because Exxon was accused of not being environmentally concerned or friendly. And so, like Michelle said, for every company that you don't like because you don't like what they're doing, there are hundreds, thousands of companies that are supporting communities, you know, building wells in underserved countries.
Yeah.
And I could go on and on and on.
Yeah.
It can be done, and it will help keep you financially secure.
Right.
How am I doing, Michelle?
Yeah, but I hear what she was saying. I get that. Just the more you know about investing, the more you can target your investment dollars. And there's nothing wrong with that. But don't pull out completely because there are plenty of companies that are doing the right thing that you can invest in.
Knowledge is power.
Thank you.
There's no question about that. Thank you so very, very much, Beverly. Michelle, I'll give you a final minute as we continue to move through this really difficult time of the COVID-19 pandemic. What should we be doing with our money, particularly if, you know, God forbid that we see a more severe second wave coming in the fall and winter?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that I love what you just said is knowledge is power. But I took a class at my church, and the instructor said, that's actually not true. What he said was, what if what you know is wrong? So he said, the right knowledge is power. And I think that's what I want to leave with. It's listening to programs like this. It's reading, you know, the stuff that I do for the Washington Post. It's informing yourself from sources that have your best interest at heart. So if you want to know about this money thing, I mean, we had this long, really interesting conversation with Beverly, and I hope that she went away with like, oh, okay, I don't really mean that I don't want to invest. I just want to invest differently. So the more you know and the better information that you feed yourself with, the better your money will, and you'll be able to get past this pandemic and the next recession or crisis that will come, because there will be another one, and you need to prepare yourself. Maybe you weren't prepared for this one, but don't let this one go by without putting in place some things that could make that next time be less stressful.
Yes.
And again, I mean, I really would encourage you to sign up for that conference that I mentioned. It's called the He Loves Me Conference at First Baptist Church in Glenlarden. And I'm going to be teaching three classes on Friday. They're called Master Classes in Finance. And I do this ministry at my church every single month, which allows you to get free information from a top journalist.
Yeah, there you go.
To lead you to other things that will make your financial life so much easier. And the
Michelle,
next time a recession hits, you'll be okay.
I gotta go.
Yeah.
Don't get adopted. Have a good weekend. Good talking to you.
Okay,
we'll talk
you
to you.
Too, Harold.
That is the Daily Drum for this Friday, September 25th, for News Director Renee Nash, reporters Bramante Bryant, Millette Green, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams. I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night and have a great weekend.